Excelsior, and welcome once again, true believers, to another episode of Zach and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure. I am Zach Wallner.
I'm Tavy Phillips.
And we're here to take a journey through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where I am a longtime fan and viewer of Marvel media and the comics and everything, so I know a lot about it. And Tavy's a relative newcomer, and I'm guiding her as we go from the beginning and do our best to catch up. So you want to tell us what we're discussing today?
Yes. This week we watched, let me see if I can do the whole title. It was the night before last, so the memory problem is going to start to kick in. It's Captain America, the First Avenger?
That's
question mark?
That's correct. Right. That's correct. It's the first, but surely not the last, Marvel film with a subtitle.
Yes.
At this point, we only have one more numbered sequel to go, and it's the only one that's had numbered sequels or will have numbered sequels, and that's Iron Man. So we will have an Iron Man 3, but that about wraps it up. And this one, oddly, is a first film in one of the series, and it has a subtitle already. They couldn't just call it Captain America.
They knew there were going to be more.
Yeah, I kind of don't like when they do it, because it's just like, well, this is just letting you know we're hyping up to the next thing. You know, yeah. We're doing the Avengers. That's like, I don't know how much, I don't think you'd probably know much more about DC and their media.
No, than not at all.
Marvel, but they made a film when they were first trying to copy Marvel and do their own on-screen cinematic universe. The first film they did was a Superman one, because obviously you start with Superman, and it was called Man of Steel, which was his nickname. And the second one was called Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Oh, why? So
it's odd that it was a V, just a lowercase v rather than versus VS, where that seems to indicate
that they're
in a courtroom battle or something.
Right.
But then Dawn of Justice makes it sound like, okay, so this is leading to the concept of justice being a thing?
It's weird. And I remember, it's a very unmemorable name. I remember Man of Steel, I think. I think I might have taken my dad to see that or something, because like this sort of thing. So I kind of remember Man of Steel being a thing. I do not remember. What was it you called? You said it a minute ago. I've already forgotten it.
Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Dawn of Justice. Yeah, that's a terrible name.
Yeah. So just like this one, it was just hinting at the upcoming team up of the Justice League. So here he's the first Avenger, even though he's not an Avenger at this time in this movie. He's just a superhero who predates...
Is this the first time the word Avenger is used in this sort of
The very first post-credit scene where Sam Jackson appears,
yes.
He says, I'm here to talk to you about Avenger Initiative, and that's where everyone went crazy. Oh my God, they're going to work towards a shared universe, and they're going to have the Avengers, and that's something we've never had before. But now he's the first Avenger, regardless of the fact that he was not an Avenger. And he was just...
No, he really wasn't.
He was just doing his thing as Captain America, and then in modern times, which we'll get to, he becomes part of this team that is put together. So Captain America is one of the earliest Marvel superheroes. He was made in 1941. He was created by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby. So Kirby's still involved, but this is not a Stan Lee co-creation for the first time of these characters, where his first published work at the company, at the time it was called Timely in the Golden Age of comics, and then in the 50s it was Atlas, and then in the 60s it became Marvel. The first work he did was a text story in the back of Captain America Comics number 3. So he came on shortly after this. So yeah, he did not directly create him. But yeah, a character called Captain America and wearing basically the flag, obviously very war propaganda to try to have someone to rally behind once. And this was before the US had joined the war. So it was kind of predicting it and just having an American hero icon figure to fight the Nazis. And that's the stuff they did at the time, making all those sort of cartoons and newsreels and things to try to support the war effort. And we see some of that in this film. Now, right off the bat, I'll just ask you overall, what did you think of this one?
This might be one of my favorite ones that I've seen so far. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I would stack it up against Iron Man, but I think maybe second favorite. I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect that I would. I'm not a particularly patriotic person. I don't think I enjoyed it on a patriotic level.
Sure.
I'm not against the idea. But I think it being a period piece was really fun. It was really fun and interesting. And it was also, I'm kind of a sucker for movies that take place in New York in like the 40s, because that's my dad. My dad was born in 1937, right?
Okay.
So... seems like an impossibly long time ago. So when I see movies where there's a little kid in the 40s playing stickball or getting kidnapped by bad guys. I'm like, oh, that could have been my dad. I think there's that. In fact, I was like, oh, we should have. My husband and I were watching it the other night. We thought, oh, and we go visit my father every Friday night and watch old movies with him or new movies, whatever. And I was like, oh, we should have watched this one with dad. Like, he would have really, I think I might go back and watch it with him.
Maybe bring
I
him
think
on
he'd really
board.
like it. Yeah, get him involved. I mean,
Maybe
I'm sure he knows more about comics than I do.
we can have him on a guest one episode.
Oh, that'd be hilarious. So yeah, I enjoyed it on that level. I already forgot his name. The Hollywood Chris that is in Hemsworth. Chris Evans.
Yes, or Pratt. There's
Right, there's another Chris
several
and there's a
Chris's.
Pine. There's a lot of Chris's floating around out there, but Chris Evans, who I mean should be in the forefront of my head because he's in a movie with Pedro Pascal that's coming out really soon. So they're doing
Oh
a lot of
yeah.
press together. And as we know, Pedro Pascal is the reason for the podcast
Yeah,
in a certain way.
exactly.
So I was like, oh, Chris Evans. I thought he had a lot more charisma than Hemsworth did as Thor. It was weird to see him tiny because I don't really know that much about him. So I was like, I don't remember him being this short
Oh yeah.
when the movie starts.
It's impressive visual effects what they did there.
Yeah, it was a little bit, it was like a better version of like what they did with the Hobbits in The Lord of the Rings, where they had these sort of normal sized guys and it was like they shrunk them. They just did tricks and
Yeah,
made
like
them
trick
smaller.
photography and then
Yeah, exactly.
force
But
perspective in the set
I'm
building.
not like, yeah, exactly. And I wasn't entirely sure that Chris Evans didn't just look like that at first. I was like, oh, I don't, my memory's so bad. I don't remember this guy being this short and skinny, but okay.
So then when he came
But
out of
no.
the tube, it was, oh,
Yeah, when he came out of the tube, I was like, oh, I get it.
so
That's the real
that's
guy.
him.
Okay. Makes perfect sense now. So yeah, that was fun. Yeah, it's a good one. I don't know. What's your feeling about
Yeah,
the
no,
movie?
definitely. Like, I'm not sure. I mean, I watched it in the theaters, and then I probably, maybe once it came out on home video, watched it again, maybe with extra features. I don't remember if there's a commentary or not, but it's probably just those two times, as far as I remember. So this was the first time watching it straight through in a long time, and I really had a good time with it. And I forget how much even the first one is good. Captain America, it's not spoiling anything to say, though, the Captain America trilogy is my favorite trilogy of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There are several
Interesting.
trilogies at this point in time, but that one, I think, is the one that's most solid and holds up all through all three films. And Chris Evans, I was hesitant when he was cast. And even my younger brother, Harry, I think he tweeted something about it. And then Jason, my older brother, was giving him a hard time about it, kind of messing around with him because I think he'd met him. I think Jason met him
Had
at
met him,
some
right?
thing. And he's like, oh, hey, I know that guy or something like. Because before this, Chris Evans, this is not his first foray into Marvel superhero films, actually.
Oh, I
He
was gonna
was.
say, is this his first? Like, what did he do at all before this? I didn't
Yeah,
really know
well,
his work.
probably his biggest role, I would think, before this was in the first major blockbuster adaptation of the Fantastic Four. So we're getting the official
Oh.
Marvel Studios one coming up with Pedro. But
Right.
this was, again, that legacy Marvel media where it was sold off in piecemeal to different studios.
Right.
So Fox had Fantastic Four and they made two movies with the characters. He was Johnny Storm, the Human Torch.
Okay.
So a
Sort
very.
of the younger one, the younger member of the family, right? The older
Yeah,
brother.
he's a hothead, literally speaking, but
Okay.
also figuratively. And those films overall, I didn't especially like, but he and Michael Chiklis as the Thing
Oh, the fun.
were the stronger elements. So he really nailed the character. I didn't think he especially looked like him. He had dark hair and a buzz cut, where Johnny's this blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. But
Right.
as far as the characterization, he got it really well. And the other thing I mainly knew him for at the time was being one of the main characters in Not Another Teen Movie. Remember
I
that era of
vaguely remember that. Yes.
fill in the blank movie, all those awful
Yes.
parodies where they were just trying too hard at referencing this, that, and the other, and seeing how
Oh,
gross
yeah.
it could be. And he famously wears the whipped cream bikini in that movie, which was,
Wow.
I think it was a play on where a female character did that in maybe
Right.
that movie with Dawson, I Don't Want Your Life, that football movie with James
Oh,
Vanderbeek. I think that might be
I don't think I've
what that
seen
was
it.
referencing. I think in that there's a woman who's wearing a whipped cream bikini, and so that's what
So
they're,
the fun
but
twist is the
it's like,
parody
haha,
was
it's
the
a
man doing
dude.
it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But like, I knew him
Yeah,
as the whipped cream bikini guy and the guy in those bad Fantastic Four movies, and they're casting him as this icon. This,
it's a
I will,
big role.
yeah, I will say, for the longest time, Captain America wasn't even on my radar as a character, but there was a mini series story event through Marvel in 2006, 2007, and he was a primary figure in it. And it was actually, they kind of do a sort of adaptation in a later film, and it's where the heroes are pitted against each other, and he's the leader of one side. And whose side are you on was big marketing, and I was on his side, and I really got into Captain America through that particular storyline. But prior to that, I got into Marvel Comics because of the X-Men, and then
Sure.
dipped my toes here and there, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, whatever, but Captain America was never big for me, but he became really big after this one comic storyline, and so then I was excited for this movie. So seeing him brought to life, I wanted this person to really embody Steve Rogers, and I was very hesitant with Chris Evans' casting because of that. But, well, I'll get to more of where I'm going with that as we go along. But first, let's play everybody's favorite Marvel podcast game show. It's time for...
Spot the Stan!
I love cameos!
Where, once again, we see if you were able to pick up where veteran comic creator and basically the figurehead of Marvel throughout his lifetime, Stan Lee, appears in these productions. So, Tavy, I have to ask, did you spot the Stan? Do you know where he showed up in this one?
I did, and I was afraid. It was relatively late in the movie, so I kept thinking, oh, I blinked and I missed him somehow. But no, he shows up as he's some sort of general, right? Attending what's supposed to be some kind of medal ceremony or something for Captain America. Only Captain America is not there. Oh, no. And some lower-ranking guy comes out and whispers in the senator's ear or whoever.
I think it was the senator.
And then you see in the audience Stan Lee as general going, I thought he'd be taller. So he gets, again, a funny line.
You see that's the track they're on with the cameos. Yeah. Those early kind of blink and you miss it ones. Now it's like, let's give Stan a funny line. So that's where it is. He's acting as if he thought that little guy just, hey, he's not here, you know, that he was Captain America. And I think I found out later in the scene, I don't know if it's the guy he talks to or whatever, but I'm pretty sure in that audience is the guy who played Captain America either in the TV movies they made or the 1990 film, which had a very limited theatrical release and then was released on home video. I don't remember. Reb Brown was the TV movie guy. It might have been him. The guy who first played him in like a full-length feature film was named Matt Salinger. He's actually the son of famous author and recluse, J.D. Salinger.
Interesting.
That's a fun little fact. Yeah, Captain America was actually the first Marvel superhero to be adapted in live action at all, because back in the 40s they had serials, and that was what they had, and they diverged from the character and his origin and who he is, and I think the creators of the character weren't exactly thrilled by that adaptation, but it has its place in Marvel live action history. But now, moving on with the games, we have our trivia cards, as always, and they can often lead into conversations as we go. I've got so many notes on this one, because it was just really packed and a lot of fun things in it, but you never know if they're going to come up in the cards, so let's just get those out of the way and see where we go for
that. Okay, bring it on. I'm going to fail, but let's do it.
Only a few days ago.
The secret to happiness in life is lower your expectations.
All right, this first one I think is going to be a no-brainer. What does Steve Rogers try to join 5 times before he is accepted?
I think it was the Army.
Yeah.
The Army. Some kind of military, but I think the Army was the one. Yeah.
All right, for how many years is Steve Rogers encased in ice? This is multiple choice. 46, 58, or 70?
Oh, no, math.
Well, I mean...
Math, 70.
Yeah.
Okay.
40s.
I mean, it wasn't that hard.
40s up to like 2011 when the film came out.
Right.
Much. Who originally created Captain America's shield?
Oh, the shield. Right. They're going. They're like, we have some prototypes. Blah, blah, blah. Here's this vibranium. I'm like, oh, vibranium. That sounds familiar. I don't know why. Pop culture. Who was that? God. Was it the Tooch? Oh, is the Tooch dead at this point?
Who?
No, Tooch.
Oh, no,
Tooch is dead at this point. I call him the Tooch. I don't remember the character's name.
But it was not him. Another prominent figure.
Yeah, wait.
On the tech and science end of things.
Oh my God, I've wiped out the... looking at my notes, I'm going to cheat. Ba-ba-ba, the Tooch, no. It wasn't Tommy Lee Jones. It wasn't Lady... it wasn't Nazi scientist guy. It was an old lady with a machine gun, who is my favorite character in the movie, by the way. Talk about women having cool things to do. Wow. Jeez, I've blocked it out. You're going to have to tell me.
All right. Think connectivity to other projects. I mean, we've only seen so many movies.
Oh, of course. How did I block out the great Howard Stark?
There you go.
Oh my God. He's the one that's in charge of all the tech stuff in this time of, in this sort of 40s era that we're seeing in this movie. He's the tech guy. He calls himself the greatest mechanical engineer
in the world
or something. He said something like that, and I was like, that sounds like something this character would say.
Mm-hmm. And
not played by a guy from Mad Men, though, because he's younger.
Yeah, so now this is Dominic Cooper, our third Howard Stark so far, if you count the guy on the magazine covers and the first, the non-speaking role. On that topic, though, it bugged me for a few reasons, because Howard Stark had no role in Captain America's creation in the comics. Some of what makes the Marvel Cinematic Universe so great is the connectivity, and that's what the draw is and why people, now I know that thing, and connecting the dots. But it's also sometimes it feels like they are doing too much for the sake of drawing connections.
A little forced, right?
Yeah.
Just a little bit forced. I was happy. I was like, hey, I know that guy. So it worked for me.
Sure, it works in that way. But also, comics have a sliding timeline where, like, characters created in the 60s, they're still approximately the same age as they were then today.
Like The Simpsons.
Yeah, basically, sure. But you can't really do that much with these movies because they're usually framed in a certain time. And obviously, this movie is a period piece, so that it definitely has to be within a certain time period. But what the modern day is, if you're going by the release of the movies, that's kind of what you have to go by. I think they've kind of made a timeline of where they're supposed to be, because right now in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're ahead of us. They're not in June of 2025. They're another year or so. I don't remember exactly where it was. But that being considered, I've got to wonder, Howard Stark, how old was he here? Or how young was he here? Mm. And at what age did he have Tony? And how old was Tony in 2008's Iron Man? Because he'd be pretty dang old, you know? Have him as like 20 in this film, he was...
Well, if you think about the videos in Iron Man 2, the videos, the old movies, right, where he's doing that Epcot-y Walt Disney thing, and he's talking to his son, and he's like pretty middle-aged there, kind of upper middle-aged in there, like 50s, I would say, roughly, maybe even 60-ish. But he has a young son at that point, I think. I think Tony's supposed to be young because isn't part of his...
He runs by as a kid and he's like pulling
something to the big map thing. So that would put Tony being born somewhere around 1960-ish, maybe?
Yeah, it could be.
Late 50s, in that sort of window.
Yeah, probably in the 60s.
But then you have to think, okay, so if he's 50s, 60-ish in like mid-60s or whatever, Howard, and then we're going back to what are we, 1942?
Something like that.
Yeah, it'd be like 20, early 20s.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's feasible because...
At oldest.
But how old he is by the time he dies, because obviously he's not alive in the original Iron Man. I'm like, does that track that he would be a reasonable age by the time he died? I don't know. Probably best not to think about too much of these.
They don't want us to think about this too much. And we also have to remember Tony Stark was like 21 when he took over the company, so everybody's doing everything super young in this world.
They're
all wunderkinds.
All right.
Except for old lady with machine gun. She's doing cool stuff old.
What metal is Captain America's shield made from? I think
vibranium. Vibranium.
Yep.
I don't know why I know the word, but it's in the zeitgeist somehow.
It will have a more prominent role in one particular movie down the road, or actually two, but especially one. Who helps test the strength of Captain America's shield?
Wasn't a cute lady. What's her name? British lady?
Yeah, come on, give me her name.
Love interest. Aw, they all have such generic names. No, I do not have that person, that character's name in my head. She's pretty British lady.
Peggy Carter.
Peggy Carter. I don't remember them ever saying that. Sure she did. I don't remember it at all.
It comes up, she's Agent Carter, and then I think she's referred to it as Peggy, and she's obviously the big...
Is she Agent Carter? Isn't she some sort of drill sergeant when we first meet her, and she's like telling
them? She's like accompanying them in the training and stuff. I guess she has a higher up role, so they do call her Agent.
Okay.
It's brought to life by Haley Atwell, the lovely Haley Atwell. I think she's actually appearing at a convention in August that we usually go to. Maybe I'll see, depending on if I go to that one.
You can call her Pretty British Lady. Is she British in real life? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I think she did a great job in this film.
She was good. You know, I think she had some spark to her.
Yeah, and there's some good chemistry. And again, it's one of these roles where they let a woman kind of show her own strengths and stuff, and is not just...
Yeah, have a little more to do. She has more agency.
Not just a love interest or damsel in distress or anything.
Yeah.
Actually, you mentioned this already, but I'm pretty sure in the first Captain America comic, the old lady is part of it, but I'm pretty sure she pulls up her mask and it reveals to be Agent Carter in the comic. So here they had the actual old lady running the antique store.
I like it this way better. I like that there's a real old lady running the antique store that's the front, and that she's ready with her machine gun if things get hairy. I love this. I want a spinoff trilogy about her, but you know, maybe one day.
Okay, what object does Steve Rogers use to defend himself when confronted outside a cinema?
Outside a cinema?
So this is...
Outside a cinema? Is it a taxi door?
No, that's when he's been through the process and he's chasing the bad guy. This is earlier than that.
Oh, right. He's like puny and people are beating him up. I don't remember. I remember them chasing him down an alleyway and then his friend Bucky coming in and saving him or whatever.
Well, think this way. What does Captain America usually use to defend himself?
His big round shield. Was it a garbage can lid?
Yes.
Ah, cool. Okay, so I don't remember that says, at all, but I like it.
It says a dustbin lid. So I don't know if these were British manufactured cars. I was like,
yeah, weird.
That seems more of a British thing. But yeah, I don't know if I maybe had read a point that that kind of inspired the shield, where it was because maybe kids would play with holding up a garbage.
And there is a scene in the movie when after he becomes the big, you know, yes, symbolic at the very hero, end, where they show little kids playing Captain America, and there's a kid full with circle. A painted. Yeah, it was fun.
It's painted to match it. So that's a nice little touch at the very end. Who flies the plane to help Captain America in his rescue mission for Bucky Barnes?
That was Howard Stark, right?
Yep. Yeah. How many rings are on Captain America's shield? Oh, that's a very
that's not
tricky
fair.
One. Take a guess.
Three?
Hey, you got it. It's just
okay,
three.
Yay. Like red, white, and blue? Okay. Yep. Got it. Cool.
I think it's red, white, red, and then the center is blue with a star.
A star, yep.
Who falls from the train during the capture of Dr. Zola?
From the train.
Remember, they're having that operation where they all zip line onto a train.
I remember there's a whole thing with a train, them running through a train. I do recall.
And there's a big fight.
Is that when Bucky dies?
Yeah, Bucky falls.
Bucky Barnes. That was very sad.
Yeah. After Captain America defeats Red Skull, who salvages the Tesseract from the ocean?
Howard Stark.
There you go. He's the answer again. Yep.
Because he's on mission, and he's got, again, Elon Musk style equipment to try to worm his way. I don't want to compare him or anything.
No,
These weird industrialists, you know.
Bad enough you got that cameo in Iron Man, too.
Yeah. Oof. Still mad.
All right. Well, this I just gave to you recently. What other name is Agent Margaret Carter known by?
Peggy.
There you go. How does Captain America retrieve the flag during his training regime?
Oh, he removes the ball. That was really cool. It reminded me of a scene from the movie Mulan that I won't get into, but he removes the bolts from the bottom of the flagpole so that it falls over.
Yeah.
And then he just plucks the flag.
Yeah, they're saying nobody's ever gotten it. They're like, oh, whoever gets that flag can ride back with Agent Carter instead of.
Yeah. And then he just saunters on. He's like, thanks. And he drops the flag into his hand and hops onto the. It was fun. That was a fun
you know,
movie.
Showing that he's using his brains rather than just the physical. This says his training regime. I think they mean regimen, right? Regime is like when.
Yeah, they mean regimen. Again, unless there's a British version of wording that we don't understand.
Maybe.
Could be.
What organization is the present-day successor to the Strategic Science Reserve?
I mean, I don't know that many organizations, so I'm going to say SHIELD.
There you go. I was going to say, there's not too many organizations.
There's not that many organizations that we've encountered so far in our travels.
Okay, and this one you've already answered previously. What nationality is Agent Carter?
British.
Yep.
English.
Who is the doctor who develops the serum that helps Steve Rogers become Captain America?
Tooch. What's Tooch's name? Oh, no. This is the problem when I give everybody a cute nickname while I'm watching the movie. I can't remember their real names. Great character.
Mm.
Don't remember the name.
Dr. Abraham Erskine.
Erskine, of course.
Okay. And so I did point out to you, I think when we watched Hulk, they have a canister they pull out and it says Dr. Reinstein. I don't know if it was a retcon thing or something, or it was made to be that was his code name. Okay. I don't remember in the first Captain America comic if he's called Reinstein or Erskine. I'd have to look back, but they're the same guy.
Okay.
In which decade does Steve Rogers undergo the procedure to become Captain America?
Well, in the 40s, right?
Yep. Where does Captain America keep his photo of Peggy Carter?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. It's like in like a pocket watch or something?
There you go.
Something like that?
Pocket
okay.
Watch. Yep.
Cool. Yeah.
Who is the head of the Strategic Science Reserve?
Is it Tommy Lee Jones?
Yes. Do you remember the character?
Colonel Phillips. I do remember that one.
Okay, you got that one.
Because no relation. That's my last name.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Look at that. Colonel Chester Phillips, I guess. I don't know if they ever say his first name, but that's what it says here. When Captain America reawakens after 70 years, what is on the radio that helps him realize he's being lied to?
Oh.
At the very end of the movie when he wakes up.
I remember the scene. I don't remember.
What's being played on the radio that's meant to give him that old-timey feeling, but he kind of catches them in their ruse?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember at all.
It's a baseball game that he attended.
Oh, of course.
So they probably should have picked a baseball game that happened after he fell into the ice.
That was a little sloppy of them.
Yeah, right. That...
See, I thought you were going to say that song. It wasn't that song. That song that they were singing when he was doing his press tour as Captain America.
Yes.
Because I noticed they played this song over the credits, this peppy Captain America song.
Star Spangled Man.
Right. And I was like, why is this so catchy? Why am I responding to this? And then I looked and it was written by Alan Menken.
I was going
to
say, if you didn't catch it, I was going
to
say.
Yes. What? I was like, oh, of course.
I was going
to
say,
responding to the Alan Menken song.
I was going to say, what do a super soldier, a mermaid, and a man-eating plant have in common?
There it is.
No, that's a great song. Yeah. It's interesting. I saw something pointed out once where people were saying, like, can you pick out a piece of music from the Marvel Cinematic Universe that stands out to you? And I think they were more thinking, like, thematic, orchestral, and trying to make the point of how maybe nothing had really stuck out. Like, John Williams' Superman,
right.
Mark, iconic. Danny Elfman's Batman score and other films. Even, like, I think Danny Elfman did Spider-Man, the original Sam Raimi one. They have those themes. The X-Men.
Really distinctive, yeah, iconic.
I guess people felt that these movies didn't really, like, you can't say what was the theme music for Iron Man.
Yeah, I can't picture it.
But I felt, well, if anything, you could say this because this is very catchy and very memorable.
Absolutely.
It's on my iPod.
I love it. I think I'll put it on mine as well.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
It's a great song. In which New York City landmark does Captain America meet Nick Fury? Well, the way they phrase it makes it sound like it's in a monument.
Well, they're in Times Square.
Times Square.
Okay, I guess that's a landmark, sure.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, it's a big open area of space, but I guess it counts. What is Johann Schmidt also known as?
The Red Skull.
There you go. Yes, the villain of the piece.
Oh, and on that point, I've started to come to sort of expect there's going to be a moment when the villain name sort of makes it onto the scene. And the movies so far have all done a thing that sort of is like, eh? Eh?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, they showed the pin with the skull, the Hydra or whatever, and the red blood dripping onto it. And then a little bit later, they say something like Red Skull. And I'm like, oh, that's got to be the villain name, Red Skull. They're making too big a deal out of this Red Skull thing. So even before he peels his face off, I knew that Red Skull was the villain name.
There you go. Yeah. In which country does Schmidt first claim the Tesseract?
Norway. And I remember thinking that my history knowledge is not that good because I was like, what was Norway during World War II? Still got to kind of look that up.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because I got Nazis stomping around looking for artifacts. Are they not concerned about this, Norway? I mean, the scientist was concerned, but as a government. But I'll do my own research later. But anyway, but Norway.
Did you notice what town or village they were in specifically in Norway?
Oh, was it the same one that was mentioned in Thor?
Yeah, Tonsberg. So
Tonsberg.
Where they had that flashback where you see when Odin went to Earth, that was in Tonsberg. And now, again, it's more of that, is it necessary connectivity?
Yeah.
He
yeah.
says,
it's
he
a little
goes
forced.
There. Yeah, so he goes there. He's looking for it. There's like a fake one in a coffin with this old Viking soldier.
Right.
And then he's looking at it. And they actually have this mural of Yggdrasil, the world tree.
Right.
From the Norse mythology. And he figures there's a button on there. And he sees what this Tesseract is. And he claims, like, it was the jewel of Odin's throne room. Now, here's again when I get nitpicky about this. How does he or anybody know what was the jewel of Odin's throne room? There are these interdimensional beings that maybe popped up on Earth. But was Odin, like, chit-chatting with Norway? Like, hey, man, you should see this glowy thing I have. It's called the Tesseract.
Right.
I'd consider it the jewel of my throne room.
I actually
let me make a mental
similar
note of that.
Yeah. I had
down.
A similar thought. I was like, where are you getting this from? What book did you read that in? Like, you didn't know about that.
Yeah, and so he keeps saying the power of the gods and stuff, so he's all... But I guess that...
I don't know what's going on in Odin's throne room. We know what was going on in Odin's throne room.
Actually, going quickly back to Thor and Odin's throne room, I didn't catch it when I was watching it again. I don't know if you noticed it. At one point, someone's walking through where the treasures are, where that casket of ancient winters is, and in the background, you see this bejeweled glove. Did you catch that at all?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, it's like a blink and you miss a thing, because clearly I missed it. But that was the first indication of a very famous Marvel storyline and where all of this might be leading to.
Okay.
This thing was seen there and people loved it. And then, like, at San Diego Comic-Con, I think the year either Captain America or the Avengers came out, they had it in a case. And so people were really excited for what that meant. But we'll get to more.
Oh, that's going to come up.
I just wanted
to mention
that because I forgot
Looking
to mention
forward to finding out about this glove, but we'll get there when we get there.
Yes, indeed. What organization is Schmidt the head of?
The Hydra. Right.
Yeah, the main baddies.
Yeah, bad Nazi organization.
Yeah.
Cut off one and another one springs up in its place.
Exactly. Well, they say cut off one head, two more take its place.
There you go. Something like that. I knew it.
On that note, did you have knowledge of the Hydra as a figure in this different
mythology? Yeah, I remember
mythology.
From something about Hercules and his tasks and battling the Hydra and cutting the heads off, and more heads would come in his place. I also, did the Tesseract mean anything to you? Because to me, it's that word is used very heavily in Madeline L'Engle's A Wrinkle in Time, which was my favorite book as a kid.
I wonder
so
if that
hear
influenced it.
Yeah, there was some kind of, I don't know which came first, chicken or the egg, but it was fun to see a Tesseract in another context.
I don't think I ever heard the word before this movie.
Cool. Okay.
In the comics, it's actually called the Cosmic Cube. And I guess they thought that that sounded too comic booky or something. Oh, I have a Cosmic Cube. Because its origins are different also in the comics. But they wanted to use it as a MacGuffin, which a lot of these early films have MacGuffins to focus on.
Sure. So it could have been inspired by A Wrinkle in Time. We don't know. But if it came later, the name came later. I like the idea.
So yeah, Hydra is a real group within the comics, and they, I guess, did come from the Nazis and stuff. I felt they leaned a lot into Hydra in this movie, where Red Skull, he was a Nazi, straightforward and simple. And here they say the Nazis, they refer to Hitler. You see a few uniformed officers that confront him about something, but mostly you see him as the head of Hydra, and you see the Hydra agents in their uniforms. So, you know, maybe because you can't, Nazis don't sell toys as well. I don't know.
Sure.
That's what the motivation was.
But... I mean, except for the iconic clocking of Hitler in the jaw.
I was going to mention that too.
Hitler's not a real looming figure otherwise in the movie directly.
Yeah, they refer to him when he's doing those shows. They have him do that. And then him uppercutting him influences where in there you see the kids pulling the comic. That's the actual artwork from that.
Right.
Like I said, it was in Howard Stark's stuff briefly in Iron Man 2 when Tony's going through it. But they have that there representing that moment. Of course, they removed in the lower right corner of that first ever cover is Bucky. But Bucky in the original comics, he was a kid sidekick, like a Robin.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
He wore a similar domino mask, and he's all like, hey!
Right.
In the original comics, he comes into Captain America's tent when he's changing, and he discovers it. And he's like, okay, well, now you're going to be my partner, and you're going to get a costume, and this will be our secret. But here now, they make him almost like an older brother figure.
Right. The tall guy to puny little Steve Rogers is, you know.
He helps get rid of the bully.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
That's an interesting change.
And Bucky is Sebastian Stan, who I hadn't really heard of before. All I knew when I looked up at the time, he was on Gossip Girl, I think. But now...
Yeah, I'm not familiar with this work. I've heard the name. He looks like a young Brando to me. I kept seeing, like, and maybe that was just because influenced by the periodness of it all. He felt Brando-ish.
Interesting. So there's that. Only a few more questions to go. Which doctor assists Schmidt with his work on the Tesseract?
I can't tell you character names, man. I can tell you it was played by Toby Jones because he's a very distinctive looking actor. And I also remember that he was involved in the, I don't know if you watched all the Indiana Jones movies, but the latest one, The Dial of Destiny, there's a whole sequence with him on a train, but he's on the good, he's not a Nazi there. He's being pursued by Nazis in that context, whereas in this context. He's on a train, but he is indeed a Nazi. Can't tell you. That was all my stalling to say again. I do not know his name.
Okay. It's Dr. Zola. Arnim Zola is the full... I don't know if they ever say Arnim, but Arnim Zola is that. He's his own villainous character. And there's a quick blink and you miss it Easter egg hinting at the nature of the comic book character. But here he's just a regular old scientist. And I'm not going to say too much more on
that. Oh, does he come back?
Maybe.
Oh, well, there are two more movies. I'll just... Okay.
We'll see what happens there. But it's funny you mentioned Indiana Jones. I was going to get to this. Have you seen all the old Indiana Jones movies?
Many a time.
So that's some geeky pop culture you are from.
Sure.
Early on, when he is talking about the Tesseract, when he's holding it, or when he's looking at it, and he says it was the Jewel of Odin's Throne Room, he looks at it, and it's shining, and he says, and the Fuhrer digs for trinkets in the desert. That is a direct reference to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
Did you pick up on that?
Yes. I mean, I don't think it made me think of Raiders of the Lost Ark, but I wasn't sure that it was a reference, but I guess it was, right?
This film,
else could it be?
I should say this film is directed by Joe Johnston, and he had been working with Industrial Light and Magic, George Lucas's effect company. So he worked on Star Wars and Indiana Jones and stuff like that. And he had previously directed The Rocketeer. Do you know The Rocketeer?
A little bit. I've never made it through the movie because I find it very boring, but I remember it from my childhood because it was very stylish and there were McDonald's toys around it.
So that was, again, a superhero in the 1940s and World War II. So he had already kind of
been in that genre. That sort of milieu.
I think it was a fairly good match for this film.
Yeah, he did a good job. It was a very watchable movie. That was my last note. All in all, quite watchable, which is, I guess, my standard for superhero movies, having shied away from them my whole life. Every time one is watchable or even more than watchable, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Sure. And on the note of connections to some of those older movies, I think it would be a good time to drop over to Penny's Corner and see what my daughter Penny has to say in regards to this film. What do you have, Penny?
Hi, my name is Penny, and this is Penny's Corner. Today, we're talking about Captain America, the first Avenger. And the fun fact is, if you are a person who knows a lot of famous noises from the internet, then you would know this next thing. During a final chase with the Hydra people with Captain America, one of the Hydra people trips over and does that iconic "ow" sound effect. But anyways, that's all for Penny's Corner today. See you next time. Bye!
Yes, that very famous scream, the Wilhelm scream, it's known as, that's often used in films of all sorts, but especially George Lucas put it in films. I think it's in all three of the original Star Wars. I don't know if it's in all three of the original Indiana Jones trilogy, but it does turn up. Did you pick up that?
I heard it, but now I can't remember when I did. But I remember thinking, oh, Wilhelm scream.
That's another thing you do.
I have heard of the Wilhelm scream.
I think it's when there's that montage of them attacking, they're gearing up to attacking the base. And it's almost kind of like the Endor forest with the speeder bikes where they have like trip wires and they're having the guys throw off and a guy like goes flying and he goes ah! So they got that in there. Now just going through notes, just like with Thor, this one starts with a bookend in the present day where they're discovering him in the Arctic or wherever, and they go into this jet that he'd been on and they find him frozen. They see his shield and they, oh, we better call this in. They obviously know what it means because he was this notable figure in history. We talked about Hydra because the symbol, it pulls up that car. I guess that car was supposed to be like Hitler's car because I think he had like a specific car he did. It's funny, at one point when they're escaping the exploding factory where they self-destructed, he goes off flying a jet and Arnim Zola asks him, what about me? He tosses him the keys and he says, not a scratch, doctor.
That's right.
And then at the end, when they're chasing him down where he's going to drop the bombs, they're using the car and they're putting on the extra boost of speed and it gets close to the blades and it gets scratched. So like, oh, didn't work out so well.
So much for that.
Going back to the Tawn's birthday. Also, another thing to question about those Norwegians. One, how did they get this thing? This jewel of Odin's throne room. Why is he entrusting it to these earthlings in this little...
Yeah, what's special about that guy thing? And their whole deal?
And also, this entire time, they've just kept it and entrusted it. Nobody there was tempted to use its power. I find that hard to believe.
Did they know what it was? Like, they knew to protect it, so they must have known something about what it was. That's a good point.
Yeah, it seems to be. There must have been an indication.
Suspicious.
Okay, also, I'll ask you this. Do you remember when he's fighting the guy in the alley and he's got the garbage can up? What does he say when the guy's wailing on him? What does he say to kind of show his resilience, that he's got this strength of will, even if he doesn't have the physical strength to match it? He says something.
Something about bullying? I know he hated bullies. No, I don't remember.
That's
what
later
he said.
On.
Okay.
He's getting the snot beat out of him, let's say. Right. And he says, I can do this all day.
Oh, okay.
So that's
he does say that, actually. No,
that's a memorable line. It comes back again when he's captured by Red Skull. He says it again at the end, where now he is enhanced and he's still got that as a kind of motto. And it's
that's right. I could do this all day. Yeah.
It's not
the real cocky superhero thing to say.
But yeah, it shows that he was saying it even when he was a little 98-pound weakling.
Yeah. My favorite line was, why exactly am I in Brooklyn? As someone from Brooklyn. It's very, very amusing. And also, I believe there was I'm just a kid from Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's also when he's captured by Red Skull. He's like, what's so special about you? He's like, nothing. I'm just a kid from Brooklyn.
Some great Brooklyn representation. In
That became kind of like iconic after the movie. But I think that's changed over the years in the comics, because I think he was originally supposed to be from the Lower East Side or something, but then somehow along the way, it got changed to Brooklyn. I'm not sure.
My husband, who's a bit of a nerd about cities and city planning and stuff, when they were doing the chase through the streets supposedly of Brooklyn, and there's all these alleys, which New York doesn't really have a lot of alleys because of the lot sizes. I'm just quoting my husband here. He said, is this supposed to take place in Chicago? What's with all the alleys? And I said, I don't know. I'll have to ask Zach because I didn't read the comic, but I know this movie is supposed to take place in Brooklyn or New York.
It's definitely in New York. And we go to when Bucky is taking Steve out on the town with a double date. They go to the World Exposition of Tomorrow.
Oh, the big fake World's Fair that didn't happen in 1942.
Right, but if you think of what we've seen already, what do you think this is a precursor to?
Of course, the big World's Fair.
The Stark Expo.
The Stark Expo,
and so
yes.
This is where we see his dad, and he's demonstrating some tech, though it's a little unfinished. Do you remember what he's showing off?
The flying car.
Yeah. So it drops off the wheel facade and it starts floating with sort of magnetized whatever, but then it drops down. But that's
another Elon Musk moment, I have to say.
Yeah, that's probably in reference.
Tech's not quite there yet.
In the comics, I think they were used by S.H.I.E.L.D. I think they had the flying car. So again, he's a figure who in this world, he's one of the original figures who put S.H.I.E.L.D. together. So it makes sense.
I'm glad we get flying cars in this universe because flying cars are cool.
Yeah, definitely. So as you mentioned, the Tooch, Stanley Tooch, he appears. He's Dr. Erskine. And he's sort of eavesdropping on Steve and Bucky, where Bucky's like, you got to cut this out because he's a scrawny little nothing. He's got all these health conditions because we see him rejected as 4X. Right.
4F over and over again.
And he uses different names or different cities where he's from. And he's giving him grief about that. And come on, we got these girls. Let's have a good time. And he's like, I'm going to just try this first. I'll meet up with you, whatever. She's like, all right. And he's like, come on, ladies. And he walks away. And he also says something. Don't do anything stupid while I'm gone. And then Steve says, how can I? You're taking all the stupid with you. So it's one of those, like, those buddy things where they have inside teasing jokes. And it's a sweet little thing. But as they're talking, he's explaining how much it means to him that he wants to serve his country, regardless of his physical stature and everything. And so that's what Erskine kind of first sets him off to pick up on this little guy who still wants to do good.
It really was a coincidence. He just happened to see this kid who's got great attitude and ethic.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, they're right around
the recruiting base that's there. So
he's just looking for the right guy to come out of there.
Yeah, he just didn't expect to find him in that place, I guess.
He really hit the jackpot with them. I mean, that guy threw himself on a grenade later, or what he thought was a live grenade later.
Yeah, yeah. And I wrote this down because I thought it was funny. I don't know if I ever picked up on it and how it sounds. He goes, where are you from, Mr. Rogers? Just think, Mr. Rogers. That's
Mr. Rogers.
That's right. Steve is technically a Mr. Rogers.
Yep.
And then so he's sitting waiting and someone whispers something and leaves and he's nervous. There's a sign on the wall like it's a crime to pretend where you're from, to lie on your application. Right. And then a guy comes in to the little booth and he's got the MP hat on, you know, military police. So he thinks he's in deep trouble, but it's just to escort the doctor. And he's like, okay, you can go. And so it's like, okay, what's going on here?
What?
And now he's trying to figure things out. And so going back to my hesitations with Chris Evans, this scene was key for me because Erskine asks him, like I think you referred to earlier, do you want to kill Nazis? And Steve goes, I don't want to kill anybody. I just don't like bullies.
Right.
So again, we see how he is with bullies and he's saying that he views Hitler and the Nazis as bullies and saying that he doesn't want to kill anybody, but he'll do what he can to fight is really, that's the core. That was Steve Rogers in that moment. And that he didn't only pass Erskine's test. He passed my test.
Awesome.
In that moment, I'm like, okay, I'm on board. Okay, yes. You got me.
He did it right.
You're Steve Rogers. I believe in it. Let's go. So that was a big moment for me.
Yeah, it's actually, I remember thinking while I'm watching this, it's actually pretty cool that he's selling this character because if you play it even a little bit wrong, it can come off as really goody-goody. Like, come on, nobody's this pure and good-hearted. But he makes it believable. And I think that was sort of key for his performance, really.
He sold it. He's very earnest. And I think it's not on a power scale, but you can compare it to Superman. Sometimes people say Superman's boring or he's too much of a Boy Scout and whatever. But if the right creative team is working on it, he can have great stories.
But compelling.
They are both like the moral compass of their respective comic worlds. So yeah, he embodied the character well. And from that point on, I was on board. And I think he did a really good performance. And I was happy that he continued in this role. Oh, another thing with Zola, when we first are introduced to him, it's in a laboratory and we see him through a big magnifying glass. His face is through the magnifying glass. That also kind of hints of his comic book nature. But again, I won't go too much into that. We're introduced to Johann Schmidt and he has a different origin here. Here, they use him just like with Iron Man and Ironmonger, where they have these parallels. It's like, oh, he was given an early version of the serum. So he's supposed to be like on par with him. But this is another one of those things that kind of bothered me a little. I get what they're trying to say with the message, but they're like, oh, it kind of enhances who you are. It's like, that means, okay, he's a bad guy, so it made him all disfigured or whatever. I mean, it was also supposed to be an imperfect formula and he didn't get the Vita Ray treatment, so you could say that's what happened and got the red skull from it. But it's like, oh, if you're bad, it makes you worse and good makes you great. But like, if it enhances who you are, wouldn't that have made Steve extra tiny, you know, or something? It makes him big.
That's a good point. So it can't be the only thing it does.
It just seems like one of those things.
It enhances who you are and gives you big muscles.
Yeah, so it's one of those things they're writing for the sake of the character and the story and the sentimentality to it. And it develops the connection with Erskine and Steve. And it works in itself, again, if you could let that go. But I just felt that it's like, oh, that's what it is. In the comics, it's the serum and these rays. Originally, the rays weren't there. I think we might have talked talked about that before, but they added them later because otherwise it's like a steroid. You know, it's saying this guy right. got power from
drugs. Aren't cool, kids. You got to have crazy science rays to make this happen. So don't even try it.
Yeah, and originally in the comics, when they first he was first introduced in the first Captain America comics. So that was said to be early on that was actually a decoy, this other guy, and then he was a lackey of Johann Schmidt, the true Red Skull. I was reading on Wikipedia all about him. There have been a lot of retcons for his history. I remember that his origin is he met Hitler as a bellhop at a hotel and then kind of mentored him and he became his guy. And then I read in Wikipedia that that was like a ruse that he planned for himself to be there. And I guess he set some other guy up to try to kill Hitler and then he was going to save his life. So the bellhop thing alone was retconned later that it was a cover story, but he had been manipulating things to get on Hitler's good side.
Stalking Hitler. That's really depraved.
To become his...
Not to kill him, just to like be his bestie.
Yeah, basically. And it was, I was going to say, it was originally a mask that he...
Okay, the Red Skull.
Not a deformed thing. So there had been a few Red Skulls, but Johann Schmidt is the Red Skull. He's the main one. He's the most prominent one.
Can I tell you, not having known anything about this character, Red Skull, or that it existed, it was particularly wild, the scene where he peels the mask off and becomes... Yeah. I was like, what the hell's happening to him? Right? Like, it really had that impact for me.
You get little hints of it before. He's kind of like adjusting his jaw here and there, or like when he's...
And I'm like, what's wrong? This guy.
And I think Steve hits him in the face and his eye is drooping.
I was like, he's got allergies? What's happening? I literally was like, what are they going for? I mean, this is totally unconnected. I was just like, what? So it was a real powerful moment. And maybe, I don't know if they assumed everybody knew what Red Skull looked like, but there were some dopes in the audience who had never seen that in their lives. And it really, that was quite an interesting scene.
Yeah. It's something, because again, like I said, it started as a mask, but in the later comics, it was like, that's his face. That's his skull. Right. Here, it's a deformed face where you could see he has white teeth. So it's not his actual skull, but it's reminiscent of a skull. So he's still got a skull underneath the red deformed face that's skull-like. I don't know if you thought this. I noticed now in this rewatch, especially so close after the other films we've been watching, when he's in the tube for the transformation and gets injected, they have a close-up of him with his eyes closed and then they shoot open. And it's just like Ed Norton transforming into the Hulk. I didn't
catch the parallel, but you're right. Yeah, yeah, totally.
They kept doing that in the Hulk movie.
It's a trope.
Like the big wide eyes blowing open. So I just thought that was a funny thing.
Also kind of a scrawny guy who gets bigger.
Yeah, and also on that note, I noticed he comes out of that tube. He's all jacked now. His pants still fit nicely.
Yeah.
Are they the stretchy kind that the Hulk...
Did they have elastic back then even? When was elastic?
I think he's wearing a belt and pants. So it's like, it didn't look like he was wearing baggy pants where he went in.
No, it didn't. We're not supposed to notice these things.
The pants got super soldier treatment too.
It was the rays. The rays made them stretchy.
I don't know if you like the little touch where he comes out and he's all buff and Peggy's checking him out and she kind of like gives his chest a little tap.
Yeah, that was great.
I'm wondering if that was improvised or if that was part of the script, but that seems like one of those little moments. And then we see after it's a success, there was a spy for Hydra there and he blows up the viewing room and then he shoots Erskine. There's one leftover vial of the serum and he grabs it and he shoots Erskine. So again, Erskine hadn't written down the formula. It was in his head. It kind of died.
He's the only one. So much for super soldiers, man.
Yeah.
The super soldier thing does not catch on.
And then he shoots him. And then as he's dying, he's tapping Steve right in the middle of his chest. Basically, stay who you are. Because right. They had a conversation earlier the night before, kind of played for laughs where they have drinks.
Right.
He's going to drink and they're ready to say cheers. And then he's like, oh, you got a procedure tomorrow. Okay, we'll have it afterwards. He's like, no, I don't have a procedure.
I'm drinking it.
So, yeah. But, you know, he had that heart to heart where he talked about his background, where he was working for Red Skull to make the thing for him. And it was a defective version. And he talks about how it enhances who you are and whatever.
Be a good man.
Yeah, that's basically what he's saying. So then there's the whole chase scene where he's enraged because he had this real bond with this guy and he takes off after him and you see he's kind of discovering his new body.
Right.
He's like, wait a second. He starts running and he's running faster. He's running past cars. He's jumping over fences. And then that's where he ends up using a car door as a shield like you
mentioned
earlier. Guy's shooting at him. Peggy gets in a few good shots. Like from a distance, the car's driving away and she shoots the driver in the head. And, you know, perfect aim. She's standing there again when the guy's driving towards her and she would keep shooting if Steve didn't get her out of the way. I wanted to make note of this because when he's running, I remember there were set photos and he had like, you could tell they were like rubber fake bare feet. You know, if he's really
he
running on the
running
streets, barefoot.
Another Hobbit thing. They had rubber feet. Captain America has rubber feet.
True.
That was a fun chase scene. It was thrilling because he was discovering his abilities as he was running. And I loved the part when the kid gets thrown into the water and he wants to save him. And the kid's like, I can swim. Go get him.
That was a good funny moment. Oh, it's okay. I can swim. And he chases after him and guy reveals he had a cyanide pill in his tooth. And that's where he first hears. He goes, who are you? He says, the first of many. And then he says, cut off one head, two more. And he says, Hail Hydra, which is their version of basically what people said with Hitler. But that's their mantra. And so I didn't mention, I thought I had notes about the car ride with Peggy. That's where they're first kind of bonding and getting to know each other. And he's talking about not knowing how to dance and looking for the right partner and stuff. And then he's stumbling on his words because he's nervous. What, you don't know at all to talk to women. See, he's just, because of who he is and how scrawny he is, he's never
had opportunity.
Romantic times. But you start to see the chemistry and the connection building even from the beginning.
That was sweet.
Yeah. And then I have a note that he was called Red Skull before he is revealed. So I guess they did refer to him as such at some point. And when he's testing it out, I guess, with those officers, because they're criticizing him about doing his own thing, going off of whatever Madoff wants. At one point you see him, he kind of goes like 1, 2, 3 with his fingers. He's just setting up the equipment and he just has these things where he's created these weapons from the power of the Tesseract and they just obliterate these guys. They vaporize.
Yeah, they just like totally vaporize.
And I was thinking another one of my little nitpicks. The last guy, he's up against the door trying to escape and then he turns and he's like, ah, and it blasts him. The door's still there, you know?
Yeah, how's that
how
work?
Does
how does
specifically
how does
know to vaporize
know
to the guy? The guy and his clothes, but
we are not to ask these questions, Zach.
Yeah, what separates it? How does the power base that it just zaps people? I don't know. But
it knows.
So in the aftermath, that Erskine's dead and they've got the one guy. And Colonel Phillips is all disappointed. And you can get it to a degree because he wanted a super soldier army. But also it's like they're taking his blood because they're trying to reinvent the formula and that's all they've got of it in his DNA. But then he's telling him, you're going to go to Alamogordo to be experimented on. It's like, you got the one. Use him. Like, why?
Yeah.
Is it, like, just
what a waste of a,
you have a super soldier.
Super strong guy. Like,
that's
what are you,
one. That's
you're
one.
You're going to waste him
soldier.
Like that?
You have one more super soldier than you had before. Yeah. Get him out there. And he's just trying to sideline him and talking down to him and stuff. The senator is the one who approaches him about, I've got an opportunity for you.
Right.
And so then we see him doing the USO shows.
Right.
Which I remember reading about it in advance. They were going to do that. And I was like, that's not part of the origin. That's not part of the comics. But in the context of it, and especially with that great Alan Menken song.
Oh, yeah.
It works and it makes sense as a means for him to get the title and the costume and everything.
Right.
So it works in universe in that way.
I love the really handmade looking classic, very recognizable costume, even to people who haven't read the comics.
Yeah.
We know what Captain America's costume looks like.
That's like the most comic accurate his costume ever looks, but it's intentionally looking like cheap materials, hokey, to look like out of time, kind of reminiscent of what the serial actor had on. Actually, I meant to share this with you beforehand so you could have watched it and had a reference and reacted to it. Maybe you could watch it and we'll edit something in later, but my friend Anthony, I met him through the comic shop I used to shop at, and he worked there, and he made a documentary about the shop and the culture and the people. And I have one memorable scene in there where I don't even take a breath and I'm ranting in advance of this movie about how I think they're gonna not get the costume right. Because I think I had read something about I had read something in like Entertainment Weekly or something where it's like, oh, he's going to have multiple looks in the movie. And I said, oh, you know, it's a funny clip. It was my standout moment in this documentary film. I'm like, oh, he's going to have this thing on. And then like, oh, get me out of this stupid thing and let me get the more militaristic thing. But Captain America, he's a comic book icon. His wings are iconic, you know, his character, his heart, his soul, his being a frail weakling who wanted to do best for his country. Not that he's some guy who is in the USO and that's probably where they're going to shoehorn the classic costume. And then he's going to be like, get me out of this terrible thing. This is cheesy. And like, that's like, look, we did put it in there, guys. You wanted that costume. We put it in there so that he could like take it off and think, I got to get out of this. I'm going to redesign one that's functional and stuff. You know what? It needs to be functional. I understand that he's in a war. At least I'm just hoping, fingers crossed, that when he comes to the modern times and Avengers, they'll get something a little more classic 616 universe. Have the damn wings. It's not going to be where you're going to lose a huge portion of the audience because they're going to be like, the guy's got wings on his head. I'm not seeing that movie. And that's kind of what panned out. At one point, he says, I have ideas about the suit, Howard Stark, is like, whatever I want. And that kind of goes back to my dislike of them when adapting these characters that have been around for decades and decades. They were sometimes using the influence of a more modernized update that they did. They started this line of comics called Ultimate, where it was meant to bring on new readers. I don't know. I feel like I might have mentioned it to you before. Maybe
I think so. When you were just talking about, I again, the concept of them basing the characters not on the classic versions, but on different.
Yeah. So, I mean, they do to a degree. Like, again, I saw Steve Rogers represented on here, and he was the classic Cap in personality and physical look. But they rebooted it to have this side universe that was meant for newer readers to not be bogged down in continuity. And in that, this is what I became known for, is being bugged that he doesn't have the little wings sticking off his head. He does only in that USO look, and then later on, it's painted on a helmet. And I don't like that. And I feel like that doesn't, he's not Captain America without those wings sticking out. He's a soldier, an army soldier.
Sure.
But he doesn't have those iconic things.
It's not as distinctive.
It's not the same with it just painted on. He just has the look of a soldier helmet. And his thing's all puffy and it's got straps. And I really didn't like that second costume in this movie. But you've got to see this clip. You got to send me the link
and I'll, next episode, I'll tell you my thoughts.
Oh, and this is another thing I thought was funny, where originally he's getting beaten up in the alley and he's saying, I can do this all day. And then he's preparing to do a USO show. He says, I don't know if I could do this. So he was ready to keep fighting this guy much stronger than him, but to go out on stage in his costume and pitch the war bonds, he wasn't sure he's ready for that. Another thing that I thought it was a little different or exaggerated from the comics, at the end of the big USO song and dance, he's holding up a motorcycle with a couple girls on it. The super soldier serum in the comics is supposed to get him to be like peak human. So he's
superhuman.
Captain America is not technically a superhuman. I mean, you could imagine and you could extend to believe what would a peak human be, the strongest, the fastest, etc. But I still don't think at the peak would be able to hold that up. So his strength is a little pushed more than it was for these movies.
I think that's the point where I had a conversation with Sean, my husband, about, like, is Captain America one of these Batman style superheroes where he's just a guy, but he's got something cool going on, like a lot of strength or cool gadgetry, or can he fly? Like, does he have magical powers? Because I feel like those are the two main kinds of superheroes you see. Mm-hmm. Either got cool stuff and big muscles, or you can shoot rays out of your eyes. And I always thought Captain America was more of just a guy. It's like a really strong guy, really good at what he, at the top of his, he's like Dr. Bashir in, again, another franchise, but Star Trek is genetically enhanced to be as great as a human can be, but he's still human.
That's on a parallel. Yeah. But he's the top with strength, agility, speed, etc. So he's practically superhuman in a way, but not quite. And then after the USO show, you see him sitting in the rain and he's doodling and he's got a monkey holding up umbrella on a motorcycle because that's what he feels like. He feels he's just, I'm your monkey, I'm doing your dance. Yeah. Though you do see in the USO montage, originally he's got his lines written on the back of the shield he's holding.
Yeah.
And awkward and nervous. And then progressively he gets more and more confident and he's building. And, kids are cheering for him and they want their autograph. And this one blonde just goes like, hi. And he's like, women are noticing me now.
Right.
I'm not the one that nobody wanted to dance with. But in the end, he still feels like this is not what I meant for. But it's also nice because it's a nod because Steve Rogers is an actual artist in the comics that's incorporated.
Oh, is he? Okay. That makes sense, though, because I was like, that's pretty good drawing there, Steve Rogers. Way to go.
Yeah.
Great. That's good to know.
Yeah. And then I do want to mention the group of soldiers that he rescues. Those are characters from the comics. They're called the Howling Commandos. In the comics, they were a wartime group. They were originally led by Nick Fury, where he was part of World War II, obviously, where he's a modern day character in these things. And they don't have that sliding time scale. And also, I think he took some sort of scientific serum of some sort that extended his lifespan.
Super life.
But so obviously, he's not there in World War II leading them. But you see some familiar characters. They were like a multi-ethnic group and they were meant to be representative in the comics, and then here you see some of that. There's a French guy, there's a British guy, I think there's the Asian guy.
British guy I wanted to mention because I did a little googling about this guy, because he's one of these guys, whenever I see him in something I go, who the heck is that? And then I look him up and I'm like, okay, it's this guy. He's not super famous. His name's Neil McDonough. But
I don't think he was British. That's just
is that not the British guy? It's red mustache guy.
Yeah, he's got the bowler hat. That's
bowler hat dude.
His character's Dum Dum Duke, and he was like Nick Fury's second in command.
Yeah, he just had a very distinctive face, and I was like, I know that guy. Again, he was in a Star Trek movie in a very small part. But what was interesting was that I learned when reading about his credits, he voiced Bruce Banner in a 1996 cartoon version of The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, look at that.
So he was that, a little connection there.
I didn't realize
that. I came with some trivia.
Nice, good job. I also mentioned, I guess when he's away and he's writing a letter, like a condolence letter, he says Stephen G. Rogers. In the comics at one point, I think he was called Stephen Grant Rogers, but I remember reading he actually doesn't have a middle name and it was like a ruse or something. I don't know why he'd need a fake middle name at a point, but I think they included it because it's part of the comic history, but I don't think it's actually legit his middle
name. It's nice that they put these Easter eggs in for the comic readers.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that even as a non-comic reader. I like gifts.
Yeah. So after he kind of proves himself with that rescue mission where he takes off, he has Howard and Peggy drop him off and he goes into the line where he just has that decorative metal shield, that triangular one.
Yeah.
And he grabs one of the dancers and missing their hat. They have helmets of US and A. He gets the one with A, which is appropriate because he wears the A on his head as Captain America.
Right.
And he goes off into battle and he's like a one-man rescue team, where Phillips was ready to just write it all off and say, yeah, no, it would take more effort to save these people. We would lose more lives, etc. So he was ready to do that. But he
Great scene when they come marching back into the camp.
Yeah.
He's with all his rescued fellows behind him. Very triumphant scene.
And Bucky's like, let's hear it for Captain America.
Yeah. I love it.
He's given his due. He's treated as a real soldier.
Yeah.
And he's getting a good reputation and stuff. And there's someone that I think might have been a familiar face to you that pops up, because she was in a show
alongside
your boy.
Yes, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones
is where I first knew her as well. In fact, I remember I paused the movie at this point and went, is that Natalie Dormer? I had to look it up. Yes, it was.
Yep, that's her. So she appears and she puts the moves on him.
Yes.
And again, you see he's very awkward with it and stuff. She kisses him. He doesn't kiss her. But of course, that's when Peggy walks by and sees
it. Of course.
And it's got one. No, it's not what
it's
it
really
looks
not
like.
What you think.
Yeah, one of those things. And then she's like, oh, I guess it wasn't so hard to find the right partner, and throwing that in his face a little bit. I have a note about Howard having robot arms. I forgot what he was using that for.
Wasn't he using it to look for the Tesseract?
Well,
yeah,
but this note is prior to that.
I don't remember.
Maybe he had some Hydra weapon, and I think maybe he had some portion of it and was experimenting. I thought they were very reminiscent of Tony's main helper robots.
Yes.
I'm guessing that was intentional. And like you said, the shield is vibranium. We covered that with the trivia cards. Like I said, he says, I have ideas about the uniform, and then they go into that other one that I'm not as much a fan of. In one of the montages where they're at war, I notice he throws the shield directly at the screen, and I'm like, that was clearly made for the 3D viewings.
Yeah.
There's some moments in there that were clearly made for 3D screening. And then from the train battle where we sadly lose Bucky, they capture Arnim Zola, and Phillips is going to interrogate him. He brings him food, but it's steak, and he says he doesn't eat meat. And he has a cup of milk. Who eats steak and drinks milk? Is that like, I mean, like beyond the fact that I'm Jewish and that's not kosher.
Yeah, even as a non-kosher person, that's not a thing.
Who drinks milk with a steak? That seemed very odd to me.
I do feel like in the 40s in movies, guys were always coming home and taking a bottle of milk out of the fridge and like drinking milk. So maybe there's some kind of, it was more of a thing back in the day and they were trying to be more period. But yeah, pretty gross, in my opinion. Give me some wine. What are we doing?
Oh, and then another thing. So now he's all bummed out in like an empty bar. Well, going back to bars where they're celebrating saving those guys, Peggy enters and she's in a red dress and everyone's all like, va, 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 boom. And now you see Bucky's trying to like hit on her. She mentions, I think, finding the right partner. And he's like, all right, well, let's go. And she's referring to Steve and he's getting shut out. So now it's like, roles are reversed.
He's like, this is a nightmare.
Yeah. He was with the two girls after Steve ran off to the recruitment center at the fair.
Right.
And now he's just getting ignored because now she's got eyes for Steve.
Right.
But yeah, at some point, he's alone in a bar with a bottle, and Peggy comes in, and he's talking about how, with the super serum treatment, it changed his biology and his metabolism, so now...
Can't get drunk.
So I feel like that's almost a callback to when he's with Erskine in an empty place, where, once again, he can't drink. I mean, he could drink, but he's not going to feel the effects of it, so he's, once again, ruined.
After Bucky dies, maybe? When he's really bummed out?
There you go. That's probably it. Yeah, that's why he would be sad.
Right.
That makes sense. Oh, so this is another thing I noticed that I'm wondering if it's also tying back to previous work, because when he's fighting off the Hydra agents that are trying to hop in the little jet bomb things from the main thing that Red Skull is flying, that they're meant to go to different major cities, Steve hops on one, he's fighting them off, and one guy goes flying into the blades of the propeller.
Oh yeah, gross.
Turns into basically red goo.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was like an homage to that guy that Indiana Jones fights, where there's that big bald muscular. Come on. And then he's like, there's the thing right behind him, and he turns around and he gets
right through.
That feels like that can't be a coincidence. Then they fight on that jet, and he's talking about his plan, and he's like, in my vision of the world, there are no flags. I guess that's supposed to mean that it would all be under him. I don't know, maybe.
Right. I mean, it almost struck an oddly John Lennon kind of note, which was a weird
discordant feeling.
Imagine no flags. Like, what? Come on.
I don't think that's what he meant. No, but they're fighting, they're tussling, and somehow the thing that's storing the Tesseract gets activated or something, and he's like, what is going on? And he's holding it, and then it, again, kind of like a sky beam thing, which were popular at that time in these movies, it shoots up, and it reveals like space. You see this outer space picture, and then it starts looking like it's kind of disintegrating him as he screams, but then he kind of becomes part of the light energy, and he kind of shoots up, and so it's like, is he dead? Or
is he dead? Is he just in something
dimensional
happen to him?
Exactly, so it's unknown. And then we see the Tesseract in its powered up state falls through the jet as it melts through each layer. And that's how it ends up in the ocean, which later we see Howard and the SSR/SHIELD team recovering it.
So now it did another Indiana Jones parallel, even though we're not entirely convinced he's dead, it did feel like a Nazi's face melting when he got. I'd love
Yeah,
to see a
wow.
Nazi getting
He's
disintegrated, no matter what the
screaming, and it's like
context.
that. I don't think I ever made that connection, but that does
Yeah.
seem to have
A little bit of
a
a.
similar vibe to that scene.
Yeah.
So then Howard recovers it. So then you could see that's how it ended up in that post-credit scene in Thor where Fury has it. So it's been with
Right.
S.H.I.E.L.D. 70 years. So we see he took the plane down and they're having that final interaction over the walkie with Peggy. And they're talking about, he's like, I need a rain check on the date. And then she's like, okay, next Saturday at the Stork Club or whatever it was. And it's like, I still don't know how to dance. And she's like, I can teach you. And she's in tears. He's like,
Right.
yeah. And he's like, I just don't want to step on your, you know, cuts out. And she's tearful
So
because, you know,
tragic.
he couldn't safely land that jet. So he just took it down in an area uninhabited and it's in ice and you see it start sinking. And that's how it gets to
Alas.
be where we see it in the beginning of the film. Interestingly, in The Incredible Hulk, there is a deleted alternate scene. I didn't mention this on that episode, did I?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah, because I wouldn't want to give anything away. In the opening scene, Bruce Banner is out and he's exploring in a really snowy area and kind of getting away from civilization. And you see him and he climbs up to this peak covered in ice and he takes out a gun and he's looking somber and depressed. So you think he's trying to end it because he can't stand being the Hulk. But before he can shoot himself, he turns into the Hulk and Hulk crushes the gun in his hand and then in anger smashes the ice. And you see this big thing where this ice is piling down and it's crumbling. And all of a sudden, an ice flow all rushes up to the screen and cuts to black. It's super blinky. You miss it, but in there's a chunk of ice. You can see an outline of the classic Captain America outfit. And so I guess at a point that's where they were considering teasing how he got to be freed from the ice or whenever he was going to be discovered,
Oh, that
because
would have been
that's
cool.
closer to the comic story of how he was found in modern day. Because the Avengers discover him in their fourth issue. In the comics, he was not originally a founding Avenger. He was found later and kind of retroactively considered one. But yeah, then he wakes up in modern times. He's in that recovery room. He figures out from the radio thing and he confronts him. That's where he runs out in Times Square, taking in this modern environment. And Nick Fury appears once more to give him the update. He's like, are you gonna be okay? And he's like, yeah, I just had a date. And it's just, that's where it ends. And it was
Sad.
just like this really upsetting moment, but it's kind of beautiful in a way too. And
Yeah.
cut the credits. And then a little different for this time, the post credits, we get a little scene of him training and he
Yep.
beats up on this bag that sends it flying across the room.
Right.
Fury comes to him. He's like, you got a mission for me? Get me back in the world. He's like, actually to save it. And then that cuts into what's basically a teaser
The trailer for
for the
the
Avengers.
Avengers, yeah.
You get a little sneak peek of it. It's a little different than the usual scene. You get a little glimpse of the
Yeah.
typical post-credit scene, and then it goes into a teaser about them. So now you have a hint of what's to come next. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
No, it's a good one. I think this one's setting a high bar, so I'm interested to see how I'll feel about what comes after
Yeah,
we
so
start
now
assembling people together. We've set all the chess pieces.
all yeah, exactly. All the places are in play now. You've met all of the key figures, and we'll see what brings them together and how that goes. I think you'll be excited. You know, it is exciting to see it all come together and really establish what this shared universe is all about. So we'll handle that next time. And thank you once again for joining me on this journey. It was a pleasure as always, a lot of fun. And until next time, we'll see you later. Thank you for listening. And yeah, that wraps it up. Thanks for
See you
listening.
next
Take care,
time.
everyone. All right, bye. Zack and Tavy's Marvelous Adventure is produced and co-hosted by Zach Walliner and Tavy Phillips. Featuring Penny Walliner. Edited by Zach Walliner. Theme music by Luis Humanoid. Cover art by Chris Giaruso. If you enjoy our show, please be sure to leave a nice review and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice, and follow us on all the major social media sites and apps at Zach Tavy Marvel. That's ZACHTAVIEMARVEL. Thanks again for tuning in. Nuff said.